the sounds of the Sprags here on Current State on WKAR. The Sprags will be playing live for us all hour. And Jerry Sprague has been behind the Sprags. Sly and the Family Sprague, we're going to call him here today on Current State. Been around a long time, and he is joined here today by several of his grandsons. And Jerry Sprague will be performing at Pump Stock in East Lansing coming up on June 7th. We'll be talking with Smitty Smith and the Sprags coming up later this hour on Current State. We hope you can stay close. It's our Friday edition, 90.5 WKAR. At the top of our program, the Lansing School District continues its focus on ongoing budget challenges. 2 weeks ago, facing a projected $6 million budget deficit next year, the school board authorized two important moves. First, it voted to privatize the district's bus system, and it authorized the layoffs of up to 95 district personnel. Michigan law, of course, requires that school districts submit balanced budgets by June 30th for the next school year. The cuts are just the latest in the district, which has regularly faced similar, often larger deficits in recent years. The district's finances worsened during the Great Recession, with both declining property tax revenues and state funding, as well as with declining enrollment. Here to talk about those finances and other important district business, Superintendent Yvonne Kamal Kanual.
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Would these two moves, the privatization of the bus system and the layoffs, would those two add up to the $6 million you need to cut, or are you looking at other cuts as well?
No, the two that you mentioned will not add up to the $6 million. We put together a budget committee led by our board treasurer, Shirley Rogers, and several other members of the district community, and developed a list of about 37 to 38 different ideas that everyone brought to the table on things that we might be able to trim down. And that list sort of was divided into short-term gains and some long-term investigation. One of the things that we're looking at over the long term is duplication of services between what our district offers and what maybe the intermediate school district might offer.
Mm-hmm.
So we're taking very close look at all kinds of different ways without touching the core mission of our district, which is teaching and learning for students.
But what are you looking at for 2015?
Yeah.
That isn't accounted for by the bus privatization and the layoff.
Yeah. So there are several other positions. For example, we're looking at the elimination of maybe five assistant principal positions at the high schools and at our elementary schools. We're looking at...
You expect those to happen?
I mean, well, you know, I think that that's probably not one of the better cuts that we could make. I personally think that we need to have the administrative support in those buildings. But it's on the table, and the board will make a final decision by the time June 30th rolls around. We're going to have to submit a balanced budget. And so those kinds of things are on the table. There are other positions collapsing work into, so maybe there might be two people right now in a position. We'll collapse that position into one position. So it's really looking at the operations division. Maybe elimination of some positions that have been open for a long time. Maybe we're not filling them. The work might have been getting done without additional personnel. So it really is, we're just not going to touch the core mission of the district, which is teaching and learning. And the teachers really sacrificed a tremendous amount of their working conditions a couple of years ago when they negotiated the contract by eliminating planning time. So we're trying to, they are held harmless in this whole budget cutting. It's painful.
Even the 95 layoffs, even the 95 layoffs, that would not include classroom teachers?
There are very, very few that includes. It mostly is operations division positions, custodians, ground maintenance, food services, things like that. And we are looking at, the whole district and all of the positions that are there. And of course, we're waiting for the retirements to come in. And so every time there's a retirement that comes in, then we have one less position that we need to eliminate.
Is it, and it's, is this retirement season? I mean,
it is.
This is the time when you're apt to hear of a teacher saying, I'm not going to be back.
Or an instructional assistant or a food service employee or a custodian. Or, you know, we have about 2,000 employees in the district. So it isn't, you know, half of them are classroom teachers. The other half are all of the support mechanisms to keep a large organization running.
I guess this proposed list of cuts that you alluded to was presented to the board earlier this month. It did include 17 in special education. I wanted to ask you about that. You have just more non-professionals working in special education. That strikes me as a high number.
Yeah, well, we did a program review, and we looked at ways in which we could maximize the class size. The class sizes that we were not maximizing in the past. We looked at combining programs into single buildings instead of spreading them out among all of the buildings. So we're looking at the special ed program from a program view and certainly following all special ed regulations and laws. So it's just a matter of tightening a little bit and maybe not replacing positions that had been filled before.
We're talking with Lansing School Superintendent Yvonne Kamal Kanul. Any resistance from the LSEA, the Lansing Schools Education Association, with regard to some of the teacher cuts? You said there would be few, but have they weighed in on those cuts?
No, they have not weighed in with me anyway on these cuts, and we've had representation from the teachers union on the budget committee. So they've been their leadership has been part of this budget committee since the very beginning,
and not their understanding of the cuts that you're looking at.
Yes.
Okay.
That's very important for everyone to understand. This is a very painful process, and it is not, you know, there's no malicious intent to eliminate anyone, but you know it is what it is, and we need to be very fiscally responsible as we move into the future.
The bus privatization plan led to resistance from AFSCME and some of the 60 or so Lansing School District bus drivers that the union represents. From your perspective, Yvonne, where does it stand right now between the district and these bus drivers?
Well, we're looking at another week of school, and I am proud to say that our bus drivers, the ones who have been loyal and faithful to the district, have been wonderful. And, of course, as this transition begins with Dean Transportation, we will be making recommendations to Dean on bus drivers that they might consider in their fleet staff. And we believe that most, if not all, of our bus drivers will be eligible to transition over there.
Most, if not all, of the 60?
Yes.
Okay. What are you hearing from the families you serve regarding both of these moves, the privatization of the bus service and the layoffs?
I have not gotten any feedback on the bus issue from families. And in terms of the layoffs, I think most people are just waiting to see what the final figure might end up being. We have to, by law, as you mentioned, we have to say up to a certain number in order just to cover ourselves. A couple of years ago, we said up to 140, and in fact, we didn't end up doing 140 at all. So I think it's just a matter of making sure that we have some cushion on the layoffs, but I don't expect that all of those will happen.
You're wrapping up your first year under a revamped arts and music framework in your elementary schools that no longer involves teachers certified in art and music. Assess year one for us.
Well, year one. Okay, so it was a tough startup because, of course, it was a completely new model. And so brand new models, even GM knows this, brand new models has a little bit of glitches they have to figure out. So, but we had a spring fling in May, which was incredibly well attended, and about 300 parents showed up at our Elmhurst School, which is our community learning site, and where the innovative arts and fitness team is located. We have 7 people currently that are that work with all of our teachers in the district on creating integrated units of art, music, and PE. And they have been working throughout the district providing lesson plans. And it has been very successful from my perspective for a first-year program. We will do some modifications for next year.
That was my next question. Yep. What changes might you make?
Yeah, well, some of the modifications that we're looking at next year, because we believe collaborative planning time is really important for schools, is to look at ways in which this team of six people, one of the positions is being eliminated as part of our cost savings. This team of six people will be traveling to different buildings and trying to find time to release teachers in order to do some collaborative planning while they go into the schools and do some art, music, and PE instruction.
Have families been receptive to this, or have you gotten negative feedback from families involved in this?
Actually, I have not gotten negative feedback from families. I have gotten really positive feedback from classroom teachers who have said to me, just yesterday, one said to me, this has just been great because now I team with my other teachers of the same grade level. She said, I'm teaching PE. My friends, my colleagues are teaching art and music, and we are all learning new things, and we're integrating our instruction into the classroom day. I've gotten great feedback from teachers on it.
There was talk of reaching out to artists and artist groups mm-hmm. like the Arts Council of Greater Lansing to help out. How is that going?
Well, yes, and the Arts Council had new leadership, a wonderful person that we really, really are proud to work with. And the people from the Innovative Arts team, I think today or tomorrow is meeting with the Arts Council on ways that we can partner better in the future.
Okay. We did speak with the Arts Council yesterday. They said there hasn't been much communication with the district since last November. Why is that?
Well, you know, Mark, it's a tough startup to do a new model, and integrating other people into the model outside of the community of the Lansing School District is not an easy enterprise. And so we needed to get our model in shape first, and then we'll extend it into the community. But I think they're very receptive to working with us, which is great news now.
Yvonne Kamal Kanul is our guest here on Current State, Superintendent of the Lansing School District. Peter Spadafore, the president of the school board, has been on the program a few times this year, and we've talked about the district's new strategic plan, which you and many others have been working on and weighing in on. What rises to the top for you regarding the longer term? You know, it's like in the short term, there's always fires to put out,
right,
but you're obligated to think long term here too. What rises to the top for you when looking at the next 3 to 5 years in the district?
A great question. And I wanted to say, first of all, I'm thrilled with the fact that we are now in a position as a district to move towards a strategic plan. When you're putting out fires as an organization, it's a little tough to look 3 to 5 years down the road. But
I'm
think we're now in a position to be able to do that. What rises to the top for me is the fact that we have a lot of really old buildings, and our kids deserve to be in educational environment facilities that maximize the internet and the technology that's available to them. So for me, it's taking a look at facilities, number one. Number two is, how do we increase student achievement? And number three, how do we improve the culture and climate in our schools?
What's the best use of the Eastern High School building in your view? What's your best anticipation? I mean, what would you recommend if you had to make a recommendation?
Well,
today?
I'm looking at a building that was built in the late 1920s, and I'm thinking that, you know, there are a lot of buildings that go by the wayside. But the big question is, where would we put 1,400 wonderful kids if we were to close that building now? There just
Patton
isn't
Gill?
Well,
I mean, would you expect Pattengill to become a high school eventually?
I think that would be a wonderful thing for the East Side community. As a matter of fact, I would envision, if I were the queen of the world, and I don't know that I would even be here by that time, but I would love to see a Pattengill Eastern campus recreated on the East Side, where Fairview Elementary School maybe gets converted into a K-8, and then across the street we have a Pattengill 912, or an Eastern. So it would be Pattengill would be where Fairview is, and Eastern would be where Pattengill is. And we're recreating the Pattengill Eastern campus that used to exist over on the corner of Jerome and Pennsylvania. It would now be on the corner of Marshall and Saginaw.
Do you feel others are there a lot of other people who are with you on that idea?
I think there are several people who actually can see that visually. They can imagine that to happen. And I think that would be a wonderful thing for the East Side to have. But that doesn't mean that there aren't other facilities in our district that would need our attention as well.
I have to ask you about enrollment. It currently stands at about 12,000.
Uh-huh.
Where do you think enrollment is heading?
I think 12,000 is probably where we're going to be for the next couple of years until people begin to understand that we have more options for educational opportunities than any district in the area.
You are launching a number of new initiatives here,
six
too.
Six new magnet
schools in the Lansing School District, and you claim to have more offerings than any district in the area?
I think that's a claim that's well-founded.
Okay. Yvonne Kamal Kanul is the superintendent of the Lansing School District. Great talking district
Thanks,
business with you, Yvonne. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks.
I've been waiting here for hours, maybe even days. When I woke up from my slumber, my mind was in a haze. There's a luminescent crescent hanging in the sky that's live. There's a luminescent crescent hanging in the sky that's live. I've been waiting here for hours, I've been here since noon. I even brought some flowers, but I woke up to the moon. There's a luminescent crescent hanging in the sky that's live. There's a luminescent crescent hanging in the sky that's live. I don't know what for. I guess that you're not coming, but I'll wait 5 minutes more. There's a luminescent crescent hanging in the sky that's why. You said we'd be together, you said that you'd be true. I can't wait here forever, it's almost half past two. There's a luminescent crescent hanging in the sky that's why. I've been waiting here for hours, maybe even days. When I woke up from my slumber, my mind was in a haze. There's a luminescent crescent hanging in the sky.
Live Music Friday and the Sprags here on Current State. We'll be hearing more from the band throughout the course of the hour and chatting them up here in a little bit. They're performing at Pump Stock a week from tomorrow at Bailey Park in East Lansing, and we'll learn more about that music festival as well from organizer Smitty Smith coming up on Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. For decades, organizations like the American Red Cross and local fire departments have offered courses in basic first aid. Many Americans have at least a working knowledge of how to perform CPR. And some of us remember that ABC stands for airway, breathing, and circulation. But fewer among us are trained to give mental health first aid. That's the aim of an ongoing training series this summer in Lansing, and Current State's Kevin Lavery is here to explain. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Mark. Yes, in the realm of first aid, terms like CPR and ABC are pretty mainstream, but have you ever heard the term algae? Now, here's a hint, Mark. It's got nothing to do with seaweed.
Okay.
I spoke with Mark Phillips about mental health first aid. He's a recovery specialist with the Community Mental Health Authority of Clinton, Eaton, and Ingham County. And he says that mental illness is much more common than many of us think.
Yeah, one of the things that we touch on in the training is how prevalent mental health disorders are. Over 50% will experience some sort of mental health disorder in their lifetime. And the mean time that people wait before they seek a diagnosis is 10 years. So there's a lot of delay in getting treatment, and we see that mental health disorders are very common among all socioeconomic lines, race, gender, class.
And there's often stigma or ignorance or embarrassment that is attached to mental health disorders that I'm assuming keep people from getting themselves diagnosed and getting some treatment.
Yeah, and we talk about some of those stigma and barriers, and just the mental health first aid education helps to break down those barriers.
Oftentimes we are taught CPR. We're taught to look for things like signs of a heart attack or signs of a stroke. We don't often hear about mental health first aid.
Yeah, we draw the parallel between our course being similar to a first aid course that someone would take, the ABCs, airway, breathing, circulation. And mental health first aid is a class that teaches people how to offer initial help to a person having a mental health crisis. And we have a youth version of that class, and we have an adult version.
What would separate everyday normal stress from a real mental health disorder?
When the disorder disrupts their daily lives. So you may have a youth that maybe they're very involved in sports and all of a sudden they've quit baseball, they've quit basketball. Maybe they're very social and have a lot of friends and all of a sudden they're kind of pulling away from friends and spending a lot of time alone. Or you just noticed symptoms of anxiety and depression. It's when it starts to interfere with their lives and their social settings that it becomes a disorder.
Okay, so there is often a sharp, dramatic change that is different from the everyday normal emotional anxiety or stress that we often feel.
Yeah, very much so. It's really looking at how it impacts the individual's life, because a lot of it can be just typical adolescence.
What are some considerations when dealing with youth in their adolescent years from a mental standpoint that you just don't see very often with adults? What's really the distinction?
As part of our class, we give range of ages for when certain disorders appear. And for youth, the mean age for anxiety disorders to develop is 11. So you see many youth develop anxiety disorders, whereas things like bipolar, schizophrenia tend to develop later in life. Things like anxiety disorders, depression, eating disorders, substance use disorders tend to develop before the age of 21.
How widespread is this training, and is it really catching on here in Michigan?
Well, this training was developed in 2012, so it is a relatively new training. We're training today under a grant through the state of Michigan, and President Obama has endorsed this program in his State of the Union address. Governor Schneider in Michigan has done the same. So really the ball is starting to roll on youth mental health first aid. Our goal here at CEI is to train 700 people by September 30th. And this is going on in a 10 county area. So by the time this grant's done, it's hoped that 8,000 people will be trained in youth mental health first aid.
There's a difference between a sign and a symptom when it comes to mental and physical health. What's the distinction there?
A symptom is something that the individual is experiencing. Maybe they're having some anxiety, some depression. And a sign is what we, as either parents or guardians or teachers, see in that youth. So you may see, you know, someone withdrawing from activity, not sitting with friends. So a sign, again, is what we see in the young person.
So if I'm someone who has some mental health first aid training and I come across someone who I think is exhibiting signs of a disorder, what am I looking for and what is my action plan to try to intervene on that person's behalf?
You're just looking for signs, again, that severely impact the youth's life. So whatever that looks like. As far as the action plan, the acronym is ALGI. It stands for Assessing for Risk of Suicide or Harm, Listening Non-Judgmentally, Give Reassurance and Information, Encourage Appropriate Professional Help, and Encourage Self-Help and Other Support Strategies. So that is the action plan that we teach.
Is this course open only to adults? Can other teens do this type of class on sort of a peer-to-peer level?
Oh, that's a good question. We've kind of limited to this grant to those 18 and over. There's been some discussion whether it's a relevant class for 16 to 17-year-olds to take. But with this grant, it's limited to adults 18 and over.
Mark, have we seen any real concrete results? And I know this may be difficult to measure once a class is finished. We have, in the last several years, seen so many cases of violence across our country with people who have mental health disorders of all ages. Is there any way to quantify that this training is taking hold and is preventing rash, dangerous behavior?
You know, coming up with numbers on that, it's probably too soon to try to draw that conclusion. But We've had several people take both the adult mental health first aid class, and then they come and take the youth. And the comments that we're getting from the people that come back is they're able to apply what they learned in the first training. So we know that people are able to take back either to their work or their families or wherever they're interacting with people and are able to use the action plan.
Do you think mental health first aid will become as mainstream as CPR one day?
Yes, that's always been the goal of the program. It is in all 50 states, and the adult has been around for several years, but the youth, like I said, has just been rolled out since 2012. So, you know, with grants like this and other grants that I'm hoping will come, we want it to be as widespread as CPR.
How can people in the Greater Lansing area get involved with either youth or adult mental health training, and are there many other training opportunities available in the coming months?
You can contact our customer service department here at CEI Community Mental Health, and they will tell you what classes are available. You can also research on Eventbrite, which is www.eventbrite.com, to see upcoming classes, or you can call 517-346-8244 to find out what classes are available and how to register.
Mark Phillips is a recovery specialist with Community Mental Health of Clinton, Eaton, and Ingham County. Mark, thank you for teaching us a bit about mental health first aid training.
Thank you, Kevin.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
I'm faster than you think. I'm like the summer sun going down. Let's have a drink and listen to the highway sound. You think I'm done? I don't return any of your calls. There's no reason why. Maybe I'm scared and maybe I'm stoned. If you wait a while, I'll come around. I'll show you, baby, that I don't wanna let you down. If you close the book, you won't get to see how this ends. I'm here for good. That's a rule that I never bend. If you wait a while, I'll come around. I'll show you, baby, that I don't wanna let you down. See what I could be, the one for our time. Stick around, woman, gonna stay in your mind.
The Sprags on Current State, performing for you live here from Studio S. Jerry Sprague and three of his grandsons, Samuel, Gabe, and Isaac Sprague, on drums, bass, and guitar, respectively. More from the Sprags coming up. We'll chat them up about their Pump Stock Festival appearance 1 week from tomorrow at Bailey Park in East Lansing. We'll also have organizer Smitty Smith join us, the organizer of the Pump Stock Festival. It's Current State on WKAR. The 2014 Detroit Regional Chamber Conference on Mackinac Island winds down today. The Michigan Public Radio Network's Rick Pluta has been there for the duration, and he joins us now with an update of what's always an eventful gathering. Hi, Rick.
Hello. Hello. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. You managed to avoid any icebergs left in the water getting to the island.
I hear there's still ice on Lake Superior, but at least in the Mackinac Straits, it does not. There's no evidence that we're still suffering that. As a matter of fact, the weather's been beautiful.
Okay, that's encouraging. Possibly the most.
But I have not looked outside in the last 5 minutes.
Okay. Possibly the most surprising development to come out of the Mackinac Conference is the governor's suggestion that civil rights for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered people be considered for inclusion under the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act. What does this mean exactly?
Well, I mean, this has sort of been developing for a while, and there's a group of business leaders, a growing group of business leaders, who've been saying that it's important to them for, basically atmospheric purposes, including that would make it easier to retain and recruit talent, and it's just, time to update the law to include that. And those are the governor's people. I mean, that's the world that he came from before he went full time into politics. And it sounds like he wanted to be part of it. He is still a little equivocal about it, but at the same time, he is asking for the legislature to do all the things that typically culminate in voting on a bill and sending it to his desk.
How is the discussion likely to unfold in the legislature, do you think?
Well, both of the legislative leaders say it's time to do something on that, and really the big controversy there, it sounds like, will be what can you do to fold LGBT rights into the civil rights law while at the same time respecting the religious views of people who essentially object to gay rights.
Okay.
And so that's the balancing act that they are talking about. The governor, among others, would like to see the legislature tackle road funding, the state's role in the Detroit bailout first, and then they would probably begin their summer break in mid-June. But it's something on the to-do list when they come back. I'll forecast this, that there will not be an open discussion or a vote on this before the August primaries.
Okay. The conference was also one of the first major appearances for the two candidates who want Senator Levin's job after he leaves it. Democrat Gary Peters and Republican Terry Lynn Land both spoke. What'd you take away from that?
Well, yeah, it was carefully negotiated. It was back-to-back appearances that Gary Peters spoke first and then Terry Lynn Land. And no surprises in, what they said sort of platform-wise, but there was basically after the event, Terry Land stumbled in her first big scrum with the political media up here that she struggled with explaining her position on net neutrality and the Detroit auto rescue, and just seemed generally unprepared. And so there was a lot of coverage of that. It was not like her appearance 4 years ago when, she basically in front of the crowd was unable to explain her position on the gas tax, and everyone basically walked out and said, "We're going to turn our attention elsewhere." And we should point out that she came out of it and committed to do a statewide call-in show on our radio station. So that she's still trying to get in the game.
Detroit's new mayor Mike Duggan was pretty visible at the conference, and
visible. I would say he was the second most visible person after Rick Snyder.
Okay, and it would appear that the conference really dealt with Detroit an awful lot more, maybe than usual. Even though the Detroit Regional Chamber is the organizer of the event, what did you learn about Detroit? What did we take away from Mike Duggan's appearances?
I don't think that we broke a lot of new ground, but Mike Duggan is still in, I mean, he still is in his first 6 months as mayor, and as is often the case at this particular conference, you know, a lot of hopes and aspirations are invested in the new mayor of Detroit. In this particular case, it happens to accompany, you know, sort of the you know, middle to final stages of the Detroit bankruptcy and everything, you know, and everything that that follows that.
I was struck by Detroit Free Press columnist Tom Walsh, who wrote about
the business columnist
for the Freep, who wrote about the palpable optimism about Detroit at the conference. This is a guy who's been up there for many, many years and has covered Detroit for many, many years for the Free Press. Did you detect what he detected?
Oh, absolutely. But again, you know, it's something like this. You're on Mackinac Island. It's a beautiful place that sort of inspires optimism. As a matter of fact, it's one of the purposes of this conference. You know, the question is, what happens when everyone gets, you know, piles into their cars, drives back down I-75, and goes back to deal, you know, with the reality of the place where the problems lie.
Right.
But, you know, all of that said, I mean, there are tangible things going on right now, that there is the Detroit bankruptcy, that there is a brand new mayor, that, you know, those are significant changes in what's been going on, you know, on with the city. And so everyone is sort of, you know, casting their eyes forward on those two things, one of them being post-bankruptcy, the other one being, you know, the early stages of a new mayoralty.
We did talk at more length about Terry Land's performance here. Tell us a little bit more about Gary Peters. How did Gary Peters deal with the scrum?
Well, because of the nature of the event, what happened was Gary Peters spoke first, and one of the agreements was that they would not be in the room. The other candidate would not be in the room, and the other one was speaking. So Gary Peters basically, you know, won the coin toss, did his piece, took some questions, and then left.
I see.
Terry Land was the one who was left in the room after the fact. And part of it is she hasn't done a lot of public events, a lot of talking to the press, and so this was kind of her, you know, first engagement with the state's political media as a candidate. Gary Peters sort of, you know, walked the island, walked the porch of the Grand Hotel, but you know, left shortly thereafter because he had to get back to D.C. for some congressional votes.
There was a reporter too that he was pretty long-winded, though.
He was a little pedantic, and as a matter of fact, the moderator of the event a couple of times asked him to shorten it up.
Mm. Education has been so much on lawmakers' minds lately. Teacher evaluation, Common Core standards, the MEAP versus Smarter Balanced. How much discussion of education has there been on the island?
You know, I would say that there were three sort of main themes here as far as, you know, Lansing policies go. One is the state's role in the Detroit bankruptcy. One is doing something about road funding. And one is, you know, Common Core and student testing and all of that. And in all three cases, it really wasn't a whole lot of policy development. There was a lot of messaging to the politicians, to the elected officials, and especially the legislators who were up here to get those things done.
Any buzz on the Koch brothers getting involved in the Detroit bankruptcy issue?
No, but you know what? This is not their crowd. You know, it is the Detroit Regional Chamber is the Detroit Regional Chamber of Commerce. And it's kind of a right of center crowd, but you know, these are you know, not government hating Republicans. This is not a Tea Party crowd. This is a get it done crowd. And so you know, this is a group of people who are saying, look, you know, we need to ship our stuff on the roads, and right now they're filled with potholes. So, you know, raise the revenue, do something about that. You know, in the case of the DC crew, the members of Congress, it's, you know, let's get that new bridge built in Detroit, and let's get the Customs Plaza, which is sort of the current controversy that's brewing on that. Let's get that built, but let's get all of that done. This is not the, you know, no new taxes ever crowd. Not at all.
Okay. Rick, we want to thank you and WDET for your assistance here the other day in lining up Congressman John Dingell for us here. That went very well. We appreciate it a lot.
Oh, no, you're very, very welcome. And we were glad to do it. It's kind of funny that, this is really a farewell tour for some venerable Michigan political
Indeed.
Names. The John Dingell, Carl Levin was honored yesterday, and a lot of talk about what are we going to do to try and maintain and rebuild Michigan's influence
Indeed.
In Congress.
Indeed. Rick Pluta is the managing editor and state capitol bureau chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network from Mackinac Island. Thank you, Rick.
Oh, you betcha.
It's Current State here on 90.5 WKAR. Our musical performances here this hour today on Current State have come from the Sprague's. Jerry Sprague and three of his grandsons. Right now, the Sprague's perform Your World is My World.
This place is dark and electric, like lightning after the storm, moving like waves on the ocean, swallows me deep from the shore. I feel the heat from your fire, I smell the smoke from your flame. I feel this burning desire, your passion calling my name. Hold me down and help me see your world in my world. Make me believe. Hold me down and make me see your world in my world inside of me. Deserted, drifting from islands, escaping nothing redeemed. A world of vacant horizons, safe harvest distant from dreams. Hold me down and help me see your world in my world. Make me lost in a sea, sails without cause, freedom set free. Gone without distance, gone far away, away. Starting pushing upon me, pressing my wrist to the bed. The heat and sweat from our bodies, this passion filling my head. Your mouth is soft from our teardrops, you whisper breath in my ears, stripping away hesitation, deep in the dark without fear. Make me believe. Hold me down and make me see your world in my world inside of me. Your world inside of my world. Your world. will make me believe you will inside of my world, your world.
The Sprague's on Current State. And Your World is My World. The Spraggs, led by Jerry Sprague, and the other members of the band are all his grandsons. They will be performing a week from tomorrow at East Lansing's Bailey Park for the annual Pump Stock Festival. We're also joined here today by the festival's coordinator, Smitty Smith. How are you, Smitty? Good
I'm
to see you.
Good, Mark. Good to see you.
The band sounds great today. What's it like playing, Jerry? What's it like playing with three of your grandsons?
Originally, it was very unique, but now it's like we're just a bunch of guys in a band.
That's fantastic. Yeah. You can't say that about three generations of anybody, really, or people who are separated by three generations here.
Yeah, I started out with their dad back in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s.
Okay.
So this is sort of like an echo effect.
Okay, I gotcha. Now, does Dad ever join in here, the middle?
He did, actually.
Your son?
Yeah, we performed at the Arc on January 21st, and we had him get up on stage, so we had three generations.
Okay.
So he played congas while we played a song, and it was great.
And I've got to ask, we got Isaac, who is 22, Gabriel's 20, Samuel is 17, and still a student at East Lansing High School. What's do you ever make musical suggestions that get vetoed by your grandpa here? You must have musical interests that your grandpa doesn't share.
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so we indulge in those when grandpa isn't around. Basically,
yes,
is what
absolutely.
It was.
I perform in a few other local bands with my friends from school, and friends who have graduated. Buddy and Bike, Emmanuel Kant, Morning Mesh is my other. Musical acts that I perform with.
But Jerry, this is a full-time gig for you. You've been doing music full-time for quite a few years.
I quit actually. My day job in 1985.
Okay, wow. How exciting.
Good.
That's fantastic. We'll talk about the arc here again in just a minute, but we want to get Smitty Smith here into the conversation as well. Fifth year for Pump Stock in East Lansing.
Yes, sir.
Describe how your festival has grown since you started it.
Well, I think we might have had 150 people or so the first year. Last year, we were up to closer to 300 and expect to at least beat that this year. We've got a better variety of food vendors. We've added the local opening act, which is what Jerry's doing this year, and that seems to be a real draw. He'll start out the festival right at 2 o'clock. That's gone well. This year, we've got some merchandise vendors coming. Michigan Shirt Works and the Record Lounge, two East Lansing businesses, are going to come set up and help us with the local flavor of the event.
And I imagine you've got a returning audience that knows about you, but for our listeners who are just finding out about this, who are near Lansing or East Lansing, lay all the basic details on us. This
sure.
is a week from tomorrow.
A week from tomorrow, Saturday, June 7th, music from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m., five bands, and then in between each band, a show on a second stage. The headliner is Harper, an internationally acclaimed Australian blues musician and harmonica player, who also plays the didgeridoo, that Australian instrument. And at 5 o'clock, Harper will lead a kids' harmonica workshop, and the first 50 kids will get a free harmonica.
All
so there'll be a lot of noise in the East Lansing households come Sunday.
Between the didgeridoos and the harmonicas, there's going to be a unique sounds in the air. Jerry, what determines, what has forged your tastes in music in terms of what you guys end up playing? It sounds like real basic rock.
Yeah, I think what we consider it indie rock. Over the years, I've been playing in front of college students my entire career. So I've always been more exposed to what they want to hear, and I've always learned the music that they wanted to hear. So, and it's always been, the edgy stuff through the past three decades that I've been exposed to and that I've performed for them. But then I wrote this music, and I wanted it to be that sort of edgy, rocky stuff that that people are listening to that's considered alternative rock or indie rock. And so that's how I approach the songwriting for this.
Your latest CD is called Summer State of Mind. You had a release party for this at the Arc in Ann Arbor, which I think was one of your first gigs with your grandsons.
It actually was.
That was your that was gig number one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. That's crazy.
Was it tense?
It really it was tense coming up to it, but once we were there, it was all it was like we've been doing this our whole lives. It was like being in a fairy tale. It was amazing.
Summer State of Mind. What's the sound on Summer State of Mind?
What is the sound?
Yeah, what's it about?
It laments about not being in summer anymore, because it talks about being in January and, you know, 30 days before September, warmer days that I remember.
Ah.
You know, stuff like that.
You are opening for some pretty big acts.
Yeah.
This summer. Tell us about those.
Well, you know, after we did the ARC concert, and we had got a lot of media attention around Detroit, and we were on the Fox 2 Morning News, and then that picked us up. They picked us up from that video from the Fox 2 Morning News, and they said, hey, can you come up here and open up for Bret Michaels? And we went, yeah.
Whoa.
Sure. And then they called me back and they said, can you open up for the Guess Who in July? So it's Bret Michaels at the end of June, which is June 26th, and then the Guess Who and the Jefferson Starship July 26th. So, big stuff.
That's new territory for you, opening for bands that big? Or have you pulled that off in the past?
No, I've never done anything. I've played over 6,500 gigs, but this year is the first concerts I've ever performed.
Smitty, tell us more about your focus when you're booking acts for Pump Stock.
Sure. For Pump Stock, we like to get some variety. So we've got an extreme bluegrass band this year. We've got Jerry playing the indie rock. We've got a blues band headlining. We've got the Lansing Unionized Vaudeville Spectacle playing right after Jerry, which is kind of half music, half vaudeville show. And Drew Nelson and Drew Howard, two very well-known Americana-type artists. Playing a duo together, or Drew, maybe I'll call it a druo.
Drew Nelson has performed on Live Music Friday.
Drew
Howard.
Drew Howard, right. And Drew Nelson has won quite a few Jammy Awards, and Drew Howard's played with just about everybody in this state. I think most people know him. But, you know, I think the point is it's a pretty high-level talent. I mean, you've got our opening act is also opening for all the people that Jerry just mentioned and played at the ARC. Our headliner is a member of the Blues Hall of Fame and plays international festivals all over the place. And you can't see this kind of talent in one place in mid-Michigan ever, I don't think, except at Pump Stock.
6,500 gigs, you said, Gary, in your Jerry, in your career?
Yeah, that's a conservative estimate.
And what kind of a gig do you enjoy the most? Is it the kind of thing that...
Oh,
Smitty's
that?
Going,
sorry.
Pump Stock. what kind of venue
outdoor,
do you like playing?
I like outdoor concerts better than anything.
Okay.
We loved the ARC, and it was so intimate, and we had over 200 people show up there on a January Tuesday night, and it was 5 degrees below zero when we left that place. But I love the outdoor concerts, and I'm loving the fact that I'm doing Pump Stock, because that's where these guys grew up. I mean, That Pump Stock, you know, that's a block and a half from my house.
Yeah.
And their dad went to Bailey School. I mean, this is like this is our place. This is our history. So.
Talk about roots.
Yeah.
roots.
Absolutely.
Roots. Will the Bret Michaels and Guess Who gigs, will those be the biggest crowds you've ever played in front of? Or have you been
yes,
in front of that
I,
many people?
I don't really know how big that will be. I mean, the biggest crowd I ever played in front of was at the Delta Sigma Phi fraternity in the 80s, and there was 3,000 people there.
Oh.
So this, I would guess, is going to be above 10,000 or so, I would guess.
It has been great having you guys on. Smitty, we wish you the best of luck with Pump Stock.
Thank you.
Here yet again this week from tomorrow in East Lansing. We want to thank Jerry Sprague, Sam, Gabe, and Isaac Sprague. They'll be playing us out here in just a few minutes. Why don't you guys retake your positions? And I will say goodbye. I will point out that the executive producer of Current State is Peter Worf. Joe Lindstroth puts this all together as our producer. Thanks to also to Emmanuel Berry, Melissa Benmark, Scott Pohl, and Kevin Lavery, Aaron Young, and Nicole Strobel. Thank you as well. It's been a great Friday. We leave you with the Spragues on Current State.
Can you see the man I am from across the water? Can you see the man I am?